Welcome to Hype, Hypeable.com's podcast about all things entertainment. My name is Selena, and this week I have a very exciting interview with David J. Peterson, the creator of several fictional languages you may know, including The Hundreds. Oh, I'm going to try to pronounce it now. Trigedasling?
Trigedasling.
Trigedasling.
Yeah, you got it.
That was the first lesson. So thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
How are you doing?
I think I'm doing all right. I'm on the set for a movie I'm working on, and it's the kind of thing where we start at like 6 p.m. and go to like 4:30 a.m.
So. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for doing this even more now.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's all right. I woke up like an hour ago, so it's good.
Okay. What's the movie, if you can say?
I cannot say.
Okay.
I'll be
excited then to find out. So I guess just to start off with, I would love to hear a little bit about your background that got you into this particular, very specific line of work.
Yeah. So I was never really much interested in language growing up, which was odd because I was surrounded with it. My family on my mother's side is all from Mexico. And then I have two different step families, one that was from Armenia and one that was from Japan. So,
oh, wow.
Though oddly enough, I don't think anybody on the Japanese side, I don't know if anybody still speaks Japanese there. Though the grandkids are not getting into it. It's cool. Anyway, now I just woke up one day when I was a junior in high school and decided that I wanted to learn every language on the planet. And so I started right then. I started studying languages on my own. I started studying French on my own and Latin on my own. And I added German in addition to taking my fourth year of Spanish, my last year of high school. And then when I got to college, I started studying as many languages as I could fit. So I took Arabic my first semester, then my second semester. I did a second semester of Arabic and then Russian and then also Esperanto, which was kind of new for me. And then I did French later and Middle Egyptian later and many other languages later. But I started taking linguistics courses because my mother thought I would like it. I didn't think I would because you didn't spend any time learning languages, but I did anyway. And it was in my linguistics course that I came up with the idea to create my own language. I'd heard of Esperanto and other similar languages that were created for international communication. But I thought I had independently invented the idea of creating a language for fun. I didn't think anybody had ever done it before. I was quite surprised, both pleasantly surprised and slightly disappointed when many months later I discovered the entire language creation community and was like, oh, not only did I not invent this idea, but there are tons of other people been doing it for many, many years. And I'm also probably not very good at it.
How did you avoid Tolkien in all of that?
Well, of course, I knew about Tolkien. I mean, everybody did, especially my best friend Blaine was a really big fan. So I saw that cartoon, not the one that wasn't super popular, but the one that was super popular from the 70s of The Hobbit. But somehow, I don't know, I just never knew that he created languages. I never, well, I tried to read The Lord of the Rings once, and I got like a page in before I gave up. I didn't grow up really reading science fiction or fantasy, and Tolkien never grabbed me. And I grow up watching stuff. So like I watched Star Trek The Next Generation. I remember when the first episode came on when I was in first grade, and I loved it in Deep Space Nine. But somehow it never really dawned on me that Klingon could be a language.
Right.
When somebody said something in Klingon, I don't know. It did not register at all that something had happened there that was different or worthy of note. Never thought about somebody inventing it. I just thought, well, that's that. Mm-hmm. So somehow, no, I just missed everything that you would think I would have hit upon growing up. And it wasn't until Esperanto that I actually realized people could create languages.
That's amazing. I am in university. I actually had a group of friends that all learned Esperanto together.
Oh, yeah.
I never did, but I think it's super interesting. So you went to university, I guess, and became a linguist.
Oh yeah, that was at UC Berkeley, where I did my undergraduate work, and then I went to graduate school at UC San Diego in linguistics, largely because I was chasing a girl.
And there's a cat.
and there's a cat. That's the nice result of it. But yeah, it was worthwhile. We ended up getting married and having a child and wow. two cats, one of whom is being very noisy right now. It's the boy cat. He's a little hellion.
So from there, how did you find yourself working in the entertainment industry with developing languages?
In 2009, the producers of Game of Thrones, Dan Weiss and David Benioff, they were putting together an internal pilot for HBO to consider so that they could decide whether or not to greenlight the series. And there was one of the main storylines in that first episode is the wedding of Daenerys and Khal Drogo. And they realized shooting it that it was going to be very bizarre if you had all of these scenes and then all of these, you know, Dothraki warriors and wedding guests just kind of standing there not saying anything. So they initially tried to have the actors kind of make stuff up, and they were really displeased with the result. You're right. They contacted an author, Erika Okrent, who then contacted the Language Creation Society, who then put together a competition to decide who is going to be able to create the Dothraki language for the show. So I applied with a number of other language creators. And so that's how I got in.
That's amazing. Because I was thinking when I used to watch 90s sci-fi, as we did, you know, the extent of made up languages that permeated those shows were like some derivatives of badly pronounced Latin. People, you know, were spouting off or made up demon languages and stuff like that. So I think with Game of Thrones, I mean, it was such a turning point for television to suddenly, I mean, Klingon, I guess, counts as well. But that was sort of a separate, like, very nerdy thing. But now it's more mainstream. Shows are actually putting in the effort to have someone create an actual language that fans can sort of pay attention to and keep up with, which is really really nice.
Yeah, I think Game of Thrones was kind of a turning point, because with Klingon, Star Trek, it was always, even, you know, in the 80s, even in the 90s, it was considered like a nerdy thing. Mm. And nerdy was considered something bad, which was weird. So it was like, it was never going to be the type of thing where people were going to pick up Klingon and say, oh, this is cool, we should copy this. We say, well, that's genre. You know, So it's like, let them do that. There were certainly fans of Klingon and fans of Star Trek, but if anything, I don't think that helped. Because then, you know, because first of all, cosplay wasn't a word back then, or it wasn't a word that people knew. And so they'd see people dressing up as Klingons and immediately just turn their face, you know, in revulsion, thinking, oh, what are these weird people? And yet here we are. I guess Klingon was 1984 and Dothraki was, well, debuted 2011. And suddenly things are totally different. I mean, it wasn't as if Game of Thrones changed anything. It was, a gradual process that may have been started by the Lord of the Rings movies and Spider-Man, the first one, really started pushing things. And suddenly you have this very much a genre show that everybody's excited about. And that, you know, just the idea of somebody saying, oh, you watch Game of Thrones? What a nerd. It just doesn't make sense anymore. And so that was, I think, what allowed everybody else to start taking a look at the show, evaluate it critically, and say, oh, what are the things that this show is doing right? And can we do the same thing? And that was why language, I think, got picked up with it.
Yeah. And that sort of like brings us nicely to the 100, because Game of Thrones, I mean, we can agree, I think, that Game of Thrones is kind of like a big part of what made nerd culture popular. It's kind of like the most mainstream genre show. But then comes a show like the 100, which is obviously, it's on the CW. It was initially marketed as a teen show, and it had a much different audience. It's not like people, you know, I mean, I'm a The 100 fan, but it's not like I'm going to go out in the world and be like, I'm a The 100 fan, and people are going to be like, that's so cool. <You know? laughs> It's a different audience, but still, they care enough to actually employ someone like you to develop a language for the grounders that, in this case, that makes sense, which I think is really nice, because I like it when creators care. So how did you get involved with that? Did they approach you because of your work on Game of Thrones?
They did approach me, but I honestly don't think it was because of my work on Game of Thrones, so that always helps. I know we're supposed to call it the 100, but it just grates on my last nerve. Just always say the 100 because that's how you say the.
Oh, no.
But anyway, no. We're supposed to say the 100.
I guess you would know.
No, everybody, they said, no, our official pronunciation is the 100. I have to get used to it. It just sounds like it's missing a word. But anyway, so during the first season of the 100, I was working on a different CW show called Starcrossed. That was a fun show. There were a lot of battles between the writers and the network, I heard secondhand, because I was also working on a show called Defiance. It had its writer's room right above the writers of Starcrossed, so they would hear a lot about what was going on. So I think that was may have been why I was not considered for the 100. Plus, I don't know at the time when they were starting the show, I don't know if they imagined how much they were going to be getting into grounder culture, how much we would be seeing the grounders at all. It was kind of something that I think occurred to them as they were writing and as they were getting onto the later episodes and as they were seeing this relationship between Lincoln and Octavia Bloom, that they thought, you know, this is something cool. Maybe we can do something with this. So after Starcrossed was canceled and the 100 had gotten picked up and was getting ready to do its second season, that's when I was contacted. And so the first question I asked, well, do any of them speak in season one? And I went back and watched, and it's going great for many, many episodes. And then it's like, oh, no, Lincoln does speak. Oh, there's Anya, and they all speak English. Mm-hmm. So that was a difficult, that was something that was difficult to navigate, to figure out, okay, they speak a different language and it's evolved from English, but they also speak English. How can we square this? So that was tough, but with a little sci-fi magic, we managed. When I started working on season two, I don't think that all the writers really kind of got what I was there for, like what the language was, what it was about, and how it could be useful. But as season two wore on, I think they really started to see what it could do, what its potential was, and that it could be cool, because like the number of lines I got to do started increasing rapidly throughout the course of season two. And then it just picked right up with season three and continues with season four.
Yeah, season four is basically going to be all grounded language. but so what was the first thing you did? I mean, do you sort of build on it as you go, or was it all established at the beginning?
Well, of course, the grammar was established, but when it comes to a language, any language that you're creating, it's never done. A created language is only finished when the creator is dead. But even then, it can just move on to a different plane of existence if others decide to pick it up and use it or build on it. Because, just think about English, for example. It's like the English that was spoken by, you know, William Shakespeare, that dude, it was a complete and full language and it existed. But, you know, he died. Others continue to speak the language. And now the language that we're speaking is very, very different from his language. And in fact, the languages are totally different. They're related, but they're complete. So it's not like you can say that the language was finished when Shakespeare died and that it didn't exist anymore. It just, you know, it carries on into a different place of plane of existence. It's like it's constantly reincarnating. And that's basically the same thing for created languages. The only dead languages are one that nobody is using or interested in. You know? So with Tregetusling, it was a unique situation. I had to kind of figure out how we could evolve the language to be different enough from English, while at the same time being recognizable enough to satisfy the writers and producers, because they wanted fans to be able to recognize words. So that was initially very difficult for me, because it would have been much easier to really, really take a bat to the English language and make something totally unrecognizable. So first I had to make sure that they were happy with the sound of it. And that resulted in certain changes that I didn't get to make that I might have. For example, I kept the diphthongs I and ow. I probably would have gotten rid of them both if I was just evolving it naturally, but they really wanted it to be recognizable, so I had to keep them.
Interesting.
Yeah, but so there were kind of three different things that I was doing. One, there was just the natural evolution that would happen as a result of people using the English language over a period of about 100 years, but minus civilization. So no education, or at least no institutions. And also with the state of the world resulting in, you know, things are being, the world is just a more dangerous place after all the nukes go off. We reason that the life expectancy of people would drop drastically. So we might actually get one more generation in there than one would expect, given the same amount of time in our world. So that allowed me a little bit freer rein to evolve it a little more. So there was the natural evolution that happened. Plus, there was a little bit of a sci-fi backstory that we touched on at the beginning and we wanted to hint at, and that we could explore more fully in future seasons, but that caused a little bit of a change to the language. Think of it like a code that still exists in the modern version of Tregetta slang. And then also something that spurred a lot of grammatical change was a very specific sound change that I included, which was the elimination of lots of word final consonant clusters, which are very, very important to how English works grammatically. Because, like, if you think about the difference between cat and cats, is the presence of a word final consonant cluster, the TS, in the plural. And if you get rid of that, suddenly you can't really distinguish between singular and plural anymore for most words. Same thing with verbs. In, you know, third person singular, you know, hit versus hits, that would be the same. But also in the past tense, things like hurl versus hurled, same thing. Mm-hmm. And so this forced a lot of that grammatical machinery elsewhere. Specifically, it required more auxiliaries, and that gave a kind of Tregetta slang its characteristic grammatical signature, as it were.
Oh, wow, interesting. So, I mean, so in practical terms, that means that there is no real difference in Tregetta slang between plural and singular. Am I understanding that right?
Yes, that is correct. Though there are ways that you can force plurality if it's necessary, and you could still do past tense and everything. It's just done differently. It's done with auxiliaries. You saw a similar kind of thing happen in the history of Romance, where in Latin you have all of these nouns that are very fully inflected for different case forms. And suddenly you started to lose sounds at the end of words. And so then you end up with what you have in French and Spanish, where there's no more cases at all. And you just have singular and plural. And then you have articles, and suddenly you need word order. So it's the kind of thing that happens in the history of all languages. You lose specificity in one area, and so it pops up differently in a different area.
And I guess the fact that there is no written version of Tregetta slang as well, like there are no grammatical set rules as the generations continue, I guess that sort of helps, or that sort of sets up some interesting variations for you as well.
Yeah, it's a lot easier for languages to evolve and lose their history if it's not written down. And that's why, like with English, you see a lot of the grammatical changes that happened. A lot of the main ones that we totally lost were before we started writing. And then now that we have started writing, you can always go back and kind of look at the history of these things. Like a nice example is the future tense, how you could say, I am going to eat. You could say that, but probably an easier way to say that is I'm going to eat. But then that can even shorten up to I'm going to eat. And then that can shorten up to I'm going to eat.
And then we get 1984.
Nah, yeah. That never happens. But it's like, because of writing, though, we're never going to lose the fact that that came from going to. We're just going to know. It's not going to be lost. Whereas, like, without writing, give it a couple hundred years, nobody's going to remember that came from going to, you know?
Yeah. No, that's really interesting. And another thing that I wanted to sort of to say, because the thing that you said, you called it a challenge, and I sort of see that as making it even more interesting, is that obviously the grounders still speak perfect English, which again has a lot to do with how they set up season one. But the first thing I always think of in that regarding that, because I'm Danish, And I've lived in Norway for a while. And in Norway, obviously, they have two Norwegians simultaneously. They have bokmål and they have nynorsk, which is like, bokmål is the derivative of, it's a lot like Danish. And nynorsk is like the language that was, it wasn't invented, it was a dialect correlation, but it was, it's kind of promoted as being their own language.
Yeah.
Separate from Danish, like very deliberately separate. And the two languages exist sort of simultaneously, and but obviously people learn them in school, so it is a bit different. But I kind of think of it as the same, like the grounders have English, but there is also this very their own language, like screw those people who caused the apocalypse and destroyed society. We don't need that because we have our own society now. So this like coordinated effort to create something that was totally their own. That's kind of it. I kind of just see them as Norwegians, basically.
Fantastic. That's, I like that analogy.
No, but I mean, it is still interesting, though, in the show. I mean, that is one of the things that's so interesting is in the book series, it's been 300 years. And in the show, it's been 97, which is, you know, as you say, there might be an extra generation there, but it's still a such a short period of time.
Yeah.
That sort of speculating about what what exactly it was, and we haven't really gotten, we've gotten pieces of it, but that backstory, the development of Tryggedasling, that catalyst of the grounders deciding we need a code language of our own, like that hasn't really, it's one of the things, like if the 100 had a spin-off, or if we ever had a big flashback episode to the beginning of, well, I guess we kind of did, but you know, more like if we ever had that, that's one of the things I would love to see, because it seems like a mystery that needs an answer, you know what I mean?
Well, that answer might come in the future. But that is all I can say about it.
That would be so amazing. Interesting. I was also wondering if you have any, when it comes to grounder names, is that anything you have any say about as well? Or does that come from the writers?
No, the names actually all come from them. And I was a bit mystified how they came up with the names originally. But I guess a lot of the names are just based on place names in the area, in that Virginia, Washington, D.C. area that have been clipped in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of like, I follow along with them. Names are their own thing, you know. And plus, this is America. So, it shouldn't be a surprise if you find a grounder named Sally.
Yeah. So when you're developing Tryggedasling specifically, are you sort of thinking... This might not be at all be relevant, but are you at all thinking like dialect or different regions that the grounders come from or anything like that?
Yeah, unfortunately, more fortunately, I mean, depending on how you look at it, I think there was more opportunity for dialectal diversity, given the reality of the fictional world of the show. But the writers just said we're gonna have them all speak Tryggedasling. So,
right.
Unfortunately, the only variation you see is in season two between the grounders and the reavers, or the reapers. Sorry.
The reaper, yeah.
Yeah, the reapers, who are kind of, you know.
The reavers was Firefly, I think.
I never saw that.
Right? No. Okay.
But, you know, they're kind of hopped up on that drug. And so they speak Tryggedasling very differently from the grounders. But, depending on exactly where all of the clans are placed and how much interaction they have with one another, they might actually speak either a different form of Tryggedasling or they might have their own language. But it depends on what their history is as well. And that's another thing that we don't necessarily know, which is even if we learn, say, the history of, Tree Crew, it's like, all right, but where did Asgeta come from? Are they a splinter group of the same original group? Or were they just another group of survivors that then joined in to form a coalition? We don't have the concrete answers to those questions yet. But I have a feeling if the show, keeps going, we eventually will.
Is that something that you push the writers for in terms of having more material to work with? Or is it something you kind of come up with within your head? Or...
Well, when it comes to the fact that I would get paid if I were to create a brand new language, I mean, I'm always in favor of them doing it. say, hey, let's see some other countries in the world, so we can have, you know, kind of the French version of what might happen with Trigetta slang. I'm down with that.
Ah, that is my dream. The concept of a post-apocalyptic world is always so fascinating to me, and just to get a glimpse of what is happening in the rest of the world is just, I would love that.
Yeah.
So do you how do you work with the actors on this? Do you go on set for pronunciation, or do you phone in, or how is it?
It's on an actor by actor basis, but mostly I phone in. I mean, I've never been to the set. I've never even been to Vancouver, but yeah, I talk with the actors over the phone, and it's when they request it. It's usually a lot at the beginning of the season, and a little less as things wear on as they get more comfortable with it. But yeah, as long as they get to a point where they feel comfortable, then they're usually pretty good. And that usually varies depending on how much a given actor gets it. That is, that this is a language that should feel very familiar if you're a modern American English speaker versus treating it like something that's totally foreign and alien. Most of the ones that get it pretty quick, they're really good, and they just pick it up and they can go with it. And I think, yeah, more than any other language I've created for any other show, I'm pretty good with the actors just going with it on set because it's so close to English. But it is nice to be able to talk with them at the beginning and make sure that I iron out whatever issues I see as they're trying to pronounce the first lines they get.
Yeah. So it's not you, it's not like you hear something every once in a while and you're just like, "No, that's not the right word."
It's so rare. I mean, but I've never worked on anything where every single actor has gotten every single line right. I mean, the general rule is that 90% of the time it's pretty good. And then some of the time it's excellent. Sometimes it's just abominable. But yeah, no, that happens less with the 100 just because of the nature of the language, I think. Yeah, every so often it's like, it's a little awkward, or it's like, it sounds like you didn't really get that phrase. Like you didn't get where it comes from and so how it would be delivered. But most of the time it's really good.
That's good. And it must be. I mean, obviously the fact that it's derived from English makes it easier, but I always think it must be so incredibly difficult to not only have to learn obviously your lines, but to have to learn these words that maybe don't necessarily, and I guess this is more true for Game of Thrones, that you have to learn these words that don't necessarily mean anything to you, but you just have to know them, and you know that there are fans out there just roasting you if you get them wrong.
Yeah,
I imagine.
that's that, and that's kind of a tough thing. I think it's I don't even know what the percentage is, but there are some actors that they want to know precisely what their character is saying for the emotion, but don't want to know what the words themselves mean. They just hear how I pronounce it and pronounce it exactly the same way. There are some actors that do that, and then there are some that feel a lot better knowing what each word means. And won't do as good a job if they don't learn ahead of time what each word means and kind of memorize it. And I don't know why, you know, actors will fall into one camp or the other. And I don't think that one or the other is necessarily better. It's just different personality types, different ways of engaging with the material.
Do you work differently with actors depending on if they are supposed to be fluent in it or if they're supposed to have recently learned it, like Alicia Debnam Carey or Marie Avgropoulos would obviously have very different approaches to how they speak Trigetta
Oh,
slang.
yeah. And that goes for all the shows I work on. Just most of the time, I don't get to usually do it because most of the time, let's all be like, you know, two people speaking and they're both native fluent speakers from exactly the same area. So it's like, well, not really much room for variation there. But when I do get to do it, though, no, that's a lot of fun. I love being able to especially produce grammatically questionable sentences for foreign learners of these languages. It's just so much fun. I've got to do it on Game of Thrones. I got to do it a lot on Defiance, and then a little bit here in the 100. Yeah, it just depends on the fictional setting, really, whether something like that makes sense. But man, I just look forward to it so much. It's just so fun to figure like, all right, here's the language that I've created. If there were a language in, you know, for freshmen in high school, how would they screw it up? How would they screw up every level of it? I want to know.
That's pretty funny. So I'm thinking about the one of the scenes in Love Actually, where the funniest
Oh,
scene where they
yeah.
screw up whatever language that
Portuguese.
is.
That was a good one.
I was thinking too about how the 100, and I have some questions from the fans as well, but I just wanted to say, because I think one of the things that makes Trigedasleng so fascinating to fans, and one of the things that makes people care so much about the language, obviously, I think it's connected to the characters and how they use it to emote. Because you take a character like Lexa, for example, who obviously means so much to fandom and has built up such a huge following. And I think when people attach themselves to her and they attach themselves to the way that she uses this language, they also want to speak that, you know, they want to emulate that. And that sort of speaks to this perfect symmetry, I think, between show and this extra level.
I think it's kind of like verbal cosplay in a way.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Because it's like, you could only do so much with characters that are, you know, just that are speaking English. It's like, well, what do you do? Do you just say their quotes from the show? Maybe try to imitate their voice. But it's like, that only goes so far. If you have an entirely separate language that has basically no fictional reality outside of this context, then it's like you could actually, that's when you can start to branch off and really do your own stuff. And I think with Trigedasleng, more than any other language I've ever created, fans really do it. I mean, so much so that I can't keep up at all. And that's largely because, you know, I work on a whole bunch of different shows and I'm busy all the time. And I feel bad about that. But it's like, never until the 100 had that experience where there were fans of the language specifically who were so excited about it, who really wanted to learn it and who were really encouraging me to expand it. I mean, with all the other shows I work on, even Game of Thrones, which is clearly the biggest show, it would be like, there'd be like five or six people interested in the language, and they'd maybe, you know, keep up with it and try to learn bits of it for a while. And then it was three or four, and then maybe it's one or two. And then, you know, there's a whole bunch of fans that are just kind of casually interested in, you know, want to look up the wiki and see what words mean and are cool like that. But nobody that really wants to say like, all right, we want to be able to write in this language fluently. We want to be able to speak it fluently. We want to be able to do it with each other, and we want to be able to do it yesterday. So can you hurry?
Yeah. So get on Tumblr and yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I love it, but I just, man, I can't keep up.
But that is, I think that's so true, though. It is kind of like, it means more. Like, when you feel so attached to a character or a show or a world or a group of characters or whatever, like, when you say something, when you're able to say something in their language, it takes on this, like dressing like them on cosplay. Like, it's just a way to feel closer to them. And that's really interesting.
Yeah. And I love it. Cosplay, too, by the way. Everybody's been doing great with that. I love the raccoon makeup.
Yes. Oh, I was at Comic-Con this year. There was some absolutely wonderful stuff in San Diego. But I guess, I mean, that sort of shouldn't surprise you that when I asked fans on Twitter for questions, the question that I got over and over and over and over and over again is there going to be some kind of elaborate official reference guide or dictionary to this language?
That would be lovely. Unfortunately,
who do we write to about that?
Yeah, you know, it's a three-part conversation, and obviously I'm an important part of that. So it's like, but it's like, if any one of these three entities says no, then it doesn't happen. So yeah, obviously if I say no, it's not going to happen, but I am saying emphatically, yes, I would love to do anything on Trigedasleng, put out a book on it like I've done with Dothraki. I think it would be great. But I'm just one leg of the tripod. The other is a publisher. A publisher has to be interested, because if they're not interested, it just will not happen.
Yeah, of course.
And then the third is the studio, because they have to sign off on it. You know, especially with, you know, a language for an active show, where if you're going to be writing stuff in the language, which you will be for a teach yourself guide, there has to be example sentences and stuff. You are potentially expanding the fictional world of that show simply by using the language. And so then that's an internal conversation with them. They have to decide, okay, do we want to do this at all? Second, they have to talk to everybody that's involved in the show and say, is this okay? You know, is there anything you want to make sure that does or doesn't happen if this thing is going to become a reality? And I think in this case, it's a little bit of both for Trigedasleng. you know, the book gets off the ground for Game of Thrones because it's Game of Thrones.
Right.
And then for The Hundred, even though I think there is a much more fervent fan base for Trigetta Slang, and that a book might actually sell better, it's hard for the publisher to argue. I mean, especially if you think about the publishers I'm going to, it's like what they do is language materials. They put together, you know, books on learning, you know, Polish and Spanish and stuff like that. And with them, they have to look at the, like, you know, all right, if we're going to put all the resources into this project, is it going to sell? And they make these decisions with, you know, natural languages. So that's why it's so hard to get finished stuff. Because they're like, okay, well, are we going to put all our resources into this when there's only X number of people that speak Finnish? Or are we going to do, say, business Spanish or business Chinese, where, you know, there's a bigger market? And so now imagine then moving over to the realm of fictional languages and looking at a show that, you know, it's a great show and has a fan base, but it clearly is not competing with the fan base of Game of Thrones. And that's a much harder argument for them to make. So I think then, I mean, what can the fans do? I mean, they've got to lobby the various language publishers, let them know that.
So would it be language publishers? It wouldn't be some kind of fandom-based publishing house or publishers that do fandom-related books? Or
Well, then there's a different problem. Which is, first of all, like, I could just put everything online, you know, myself,
right.
But the studio wouldn't be happy about that because, you know, it's kind of all their material and they're not getting any money for it. So, and they want to get money for it. So then, but also with the fan base stuff. So like what you're probably looking at is a smaller book that might have maybe 20 phrases in the language in the book. And then the book is mostly devoted to PR for the show. And I know that fans of the language would not be interested in that. Like they did a thing like that. I remember for the Na'vi language from Avatar, they did a thing like that. They did it without the creator of the language's permission. And like most of the stuff, there was tons of typos in it. Most of it was wrong. and it wasn't very thorough. And so you ended up with this book that had no home. Like it was maybe they were just trying to sell it to people at the counter on Christmas, but it's not like people that were seriously interested in the language were going to pick up this book. It wasn't any good.
Right. So it would need to be something serious.
Yeah.
And that's what people want too.
Yeah.
They would want to learn it. They would want to study it like a language.
Right.
Well, I mean, we can only hope. We can only try to, I mean, anything that I'm sure anything that you know, tell the fans on Twitter or Tumblr or whatever to do, they would probably do because it the passion is incredible.
Yeah. And they should know I've made my own inquiries. I've pitched it. I keep telling them, man, you guys don't know the fan base for this language. It's different from any other the other languages I've ever done. It's different. This is going to be worth it. I send out my feelers. I'm doing my best.
Oh, well, let's cross our fingers. Do you think, speaking about the future of The Hundred, like, do you think it's more likely if the show goes on, or is there still hope even if the show goes off the air?
If the show goes off the air, I say I think there is a different type of hope, which is that I don't think that the CW is going to care at that point if I share whatever materials I have online for free.
Right.
But obviously, you know,
that would just suck for you.
Yeah. But also for those who are fans of both the show and the language, it's probably not a scenario you want to root for.
No.
You're hoping for Supernatural. God, how many seasons does that show had?
I know. What are we? 12, 13?
That's ridiculous.
Somewhere around that, I think.
That doesn't happen anymore.
It's pretty great. It's pretty crazy. It's just like under the radar. It just keeps chugging along.
Yeah,
I love it.
Wild.
Well, you can always. There's no official language of Supernatural. I think.
No. Nope. Could have been. Creators of Supernatural.
Demon language. Yeah. So, but I mean, I do have some fan questions. I don't know if you can on the spot answer some of these, and if you can't, don't worry about it. I just thought I would ask,
right,
since I have you here to pronounce stuff. So Lil asks if you can say I love you in grounder language.
How would you in?
Excuse me?
That's how you say it. I hold you in.
I hold you in.
Yeah, I hold you in.
Ah. And this one, next one's from Leonie, and I hope this is not directed at either of us. She wants to know, how do you say you are dead to me?
Probably, you stay down, gone I.
Okay, so kind of like a...
It's like, yeah, you know, you stay down is your dad, and then mm-hmm. gone I is kind of like for me. I think with respect to me, but I think it makes more sense to use gone here than has to. Yeah. Mm. So that's, I think, how you do it. Yeah.
Okay. And Salty Mother Fudger would like to know if you have some fun words or swear words.
Oh man, there are tons of swear words. Tons of swear words. Let's see. Let me see if I've tagged this language yet. Darn it, I haven't. I've got a new tagging system so that I can get to all the swear words quickly, but I haven't done Trigetta slang yet. I think the dictionary is too big. I need a free afternoon and a viewing of Bloodsport. I'll do it. Okay, so let me try that. I think the fans might know about this one, but I just think it's funny.
Okay.
Chop fappa. That's okay. It means loud mouth.
Okay.
That's terrible. I love it. Brown Wada, that's one that's been used in the show a lot. Brown Wada is just like idiot or fool. Somebody who drink mm-hmm. brown wada. And then Bushada is a coward or wimp. Somebody that hides in the bush. That's too crude for right now. Stumucha. Yeah, that's a fun one. It's like a bastard.
Hastumucha?
No, a stumucha.
A stumucha.
Oh, stumucha, okay. Yeah. Somebody's stumucha. Mooching off your stew, man.
Oh, wow.
That's sharing for everybody.
That's amazing. How do you come up with those?
It just depends on the situation, because most of these are generated in the dialogue themselves. Or sometimes I come up with them. Sometimes I've also gotten on Slack with the fans and we come up with them too. But it just depends on the situation, what feels right. Man, I was so close. I was so close to including as an insult, Chompora.
I got that one.
But it was going to be for season 4, but at the time it was pre-election. I thought, well, no, but realistically, he's gonna lose the election, and he just won't be relevant by this stage. No. And so it wouldn't make sense for it to be a word in the language. So I didn't. I mean, who could predict that?
I know. Now it's already historically inaccurate. Oh man, that would have been a good one. Crossing fingers for season 5.
Yeah.
There's also someone wants to know. I think this is in relation to the trailer. Who wants to know how you say "We will rise"?
Oh, you know what? I don't think I can say that. Okay, let me ask, because I didn't look at the trailer. Do they say "We will rise" in Trigetta slang in the trailer, or do they just say it in English?
Just in English.
Sorry, I can't do it.
Okay, do you want me to cut that out, that question?
Well, I mean, you can let fans know that there is going to be a way to say it and, you know, tune in.
Oh, fun. Oh, my God, that's so great. Yeah, no, the trailer kind of ends with, like, this big, like, graffiti word, like, "We will rise," like, dun, dun, dun. So it's like, I think that's how they got that. Very cool. It's a very good trailer. It's very evocative and very, very scary.
Oh, yeah. This season's something else.
Yeah. I love the trailer. I mean, obviously, I have no idea what's coming, but I love the trailer because I think it sort of makes it very clear that this season is going to continue the 100 sort of trajectory into just madness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. but there have been some conversations after season 3, sort of like, are they going to tone it down? Is it going to be, you know, slower and more nice? No, it doesn't look like that'll be the case.
Yeah, but don't worry. Season 5, I'm sure, will be focused primarily on, you know, setting up some community gardens and, you know, responsible irrigation practices.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. That's what we want. When they're all stuck in some like bunker somewhere, the survivors of the apocalypse, and they can't get out. Yeah. That's what they'll do. That's my theory. How much do you sort of know about a season ahead as you're developing a language? Do you only get like isolated lines of dialogue, or are you sort of more aware of the general context?
I get the full scripts. This season, there have been redacted scripts that have been getting shared on the system that we use for script sharing. And so, like, if I ask for them, I can get them. Mm-hmm. But there are just certain scenes that are not for general distribution, I guess, amongst the crew. So
interesting. Was that the case last season as well? Or?
No. This is the first season that they're doing that.
Mm.
So I know most of the stuff, or I should know most of the stuff, but I don't necessarily know everything. I've had a couple of really, really busy and hectic months.
Right.
So there are a couple of scripts that I have not read.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. I know there were some leaks last season, so it could have something to do with it.
Who really? Knows?
Yeah.
The one me.
Yeah. No, I didn't say I was. I just know there were some people, you know, that had pages of the script they were sharing around, and it was all like terrible. And I don't think they want that to happen. Anyway.
Yeah.
So Grady Bridges asks, how do you keep, I guess this kind of relates to your tagging system. How do you keep track of it all?
Yes. So I've got a document here, and I'm really pleased with how the document works for most types of languages. What I'm saying is like the format is the same. So I have the full reference grammar at the beginning, and then a quick reference guide that has tables and stuff. And then I have the main portion of the document is the language to English. So in this case, tree get assigned to English. And that's where the full definitions are. And then I have a quick little, you know, one-to-one English to tree get assigned section at the back, where it's just here's the English word and here's the tree get assigned version. And if I feel like the definition is misleading, then I just put a little thing that says see entry. So I know to not just use it without looking at the full definition in the other section. So that's how I keep track of it. It's all in the Mac equivalent of a Word document. This is in a program called Pages.
Mm-hmm.
And it works very well. Every single language will have its own way for setting up an entry. So, funny. Just in tree get assigned, we have the version of the word, how it's pronounced, its etymology, which I realized I left off of one word on this random page that I'm looking at. So just added it. And then I have the definitions. Now, my recent tagging system, which I'm going to add to this language, which was inspired by an intern I had, Julia Springer, I'm adding in curly brackets after the part of speech, a 2-digit code. Can be 00, 01, 10, or 11. And then what that tells me is the 0 means it's basically a neutral term. 1 means that it's specialized for some reason. Either it's technical or it's an artsy term or it's only used in certain circumstances or it's only ceremonial. So it's just so that I know. And then for the other one, it's whether it's neutral or potentially offensive or crude or something like that. So that's how I find all of the swear words very easily. And then I just put like a little asterisk after it if I think it's a particularly good word to bring out during interviews, because I always get like, what's your favorite word? And
right.
I'm like, oh God, I don't know. So I'm making my way through all of my languages and kind of upgrading them in this way, so that I can actually find this information easily. But I haven't done tree get assigned yet because the dictionary's on the larger side, and so it'll take me some time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, I imagine. I mean, on all the languages you do, you must do a lot, but tree get assigned just seems so massive and complete, you know, and that's one of the reasons it's so intriguing.
It's fun.
The Blark again asks, could you speak it fluently?
No, but I think if there was a language I've created that I could get to speaking pretty fluently, it's probably this one, just because it's so similar to English.
Yeah.
I mean, the bar to learning the language is really low for English speakers, for American English speakers, I would say.
Right. Right. Yeah. In other words, I probably couldn't learn.
There are some things that you would find puzzling, I think. But it sounds like, I mean, you've been in America a while, yeah?
No, I live in Denmark.
Wait, you currently live in Denmark?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
I just, it's actually, you might find this interesting as a linguist. I used to speak British English in school because that gave us higher grades. But then I studied in Britain and they all thought I was making fun of them. So I very actively tried to change my accent. Because I would come in somewhere and be like, hello, my name is Selena. And they'd be like, are you kidding?
All right. Well, here's a nice test from you. So, what am I saying here? How you gonna hit him up? Yeah.
Oh, can you say it again?
How you gonna hit him up? Yeah.
Are you gonna hit them up, yo?
And what's that mean?
Are you gonna say hi to them? Are you gonna call them? Are you gonna go see them?
All right. So you know, it sounds like you're pretty good with American
ish. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got Trump voter, so I'm halfway there.
Oh, yeah.
That's funny. Let me just see. I realize I've been keeping you a while, so I won't keep you for too much longer. But do you think that, and this, you kind of touched on this already a little bit earlier, but if, say, that the world ended, this hypothetical scenario, we hope, that the world ends and, the education system breaks down and society as we know it kind of breaks down. Is it realistic that a language like this would develop? Maybe not in 97 years, but over the course of a couple of hundred years. Do you think the English language would develop in a similar fashion to this?
Oh, yeah, no, I think actually the level of evolution I've applied to English for this language is pretty mild. There are certain things that would never happen because there's a code in here for, switching certain things words for mother and father and son and daughter, come from the phrases number one, number two, number three, and number four. Mm. And that was a specific code thing so that nobody would know who you were talking about, that you were talking about your own parents or your children. So that's like the type of thing. I mean, that'll never happen. That was just something that happened in this sci-fi context. Mm. But certain other things that I have done could happen. But that's just the way it is with language evolution. There are always things that could happen.
Right.
It's not necessarily going to be the case that they will. But for those elements that are non-sci-fi, that are just strict language evolution, yeah, I think it's definitely a possibility.
Mm. Interesting. So we are kind of beginning to get to the end now, but I also wanted to really ask really briefly, you're also going to be working on Emerald City, is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
That's exciting. How many languages are you developing for that, if you can say?
Two. And
interesting.
And developed, of course. I mean, the show is debuting in January. We're all done.
Yeah.
Or we better be.
Oh yeah, I think there were some screeners actually available for that. So, that's so exciting! I'm so excited for that show. What do you think about this growing? Because it does show that there is a growing trend to hire language developers, and I assume you're not the only one who is being brought into the TV and movie fold.
There are more jobs than ever, certainly, but that still amounts to about five or six jobs a year.
Right.
So it's not enough to sustain an industry. And there's also just a very troubling aspect, which I don't necessarily know what to do about, but it's something that's been on my mind for quite some time, which is it's not necessarily the case that my situation has been repeated. Mm. You know, there are hundreds and thousands of language creators and probably at least 100 that could do as good a job as I do. on anything, that have as much experience creating languages and have as much skill as I do, that they would be able to, at least for the language creation aspect of it, that they would be able to do what I do. But I just don't know how they get jobs. Because it keeps happening that if you're hearing about a television show where there's some created language and I'm not doing it, it's not being done by a language creator. It's just being done by a random person or just the writing staff. So I'm not sure why that's the case. But if there are showrunners out there listening, you don't have to work with me. You can always call me, and I know people. I can give you some great people. Probably people better than me. But yeah, you don't have to work with me if for some reason you're just looking at this and they're like, oh, that guy.
It's just like the name they know. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Mm. But, I don't know. I would like for there to be a very transparent and obvious way that somebody who is just really good at creating languages could make their way into television and film. Right. Because I think if there were more of us, it would be better. Mm-hmm. It would also be great if there was enough money in the industry to be able to support several people working on the same project.
Oh, yeah.
Because that would just make things so much easier. Oh, my goodness, so much
But I mean, but I think if you were going to sort of campaign for that, if you were going to make a case for it, I think growing a fandom is one of the best ways to sell it. Because I mean, and that's The 100 is perhaps an even better example than Game of Thrones, because it just not only does it sort of speak to people's obsessive, passionate, I have to know everything about this world side, but it also encourages communities and it encourages a deeper appreciation and understanding of that thing. Like, I'm thinking if I was, because I was a big Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan. I wasn't a Slayer back in the day. I was a fan back in the day. And I was just thinking, like, because they made up all that, like, half Latin stuff. And I was just thinking, if there had been a language, like, I would have learned it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, of course. Or, like, a Harry Potter, like, a magical language. Like, I would have learned that crap. And then you look at something like Star Wars or something like or Marvel or any of those huge franchises, like add a language to that, people are going to learn it for sure.
Star Wars is the biggest disappointment.
Oh, really?
And continues to be the biggest disappointment when it comes to television and film. Oh, my God. Just disaster. And then, with authors, that's a whole different thing. I don't know why, but it just doesn't. It just doesn't seem to grab them at all. Like, especially authors, usually what happens is this. It'll be like, oh, so people like created languages. I guess I should create one. It's like, no.
I could do that.
But yeah. Authors, though, they like to make sure that they're in charge of everything. It's right. Different from television and film, where they expect to hire experts to do whatever it is. Because it's like, it's not one person that gets a TV show or a film off the ground. It'd be laughable to even consider that you could do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. I'm glad you said Star Wars too, because I think that's like, it's one of the things I always think of is like, we would love that. We would just eat that up,
I know. I would. I mean, just as a fan, it's just, it's so disappointing. So disappointing. They just continue to drop the ball. And seem to not really care about it.
Yeah. Are you listening, Kathleen Kennedy? Probably. But so to begin to wrap up now, so I'll let you go in a bit. But on hype, we always end with the segment called How We Hype, which is where we ask what's catching your attention in fandom. What is getting you excited right now if you have any time in your busy schedule to consume anything you're not working on?
Yeah, I don't, but but I will tell you the shows that I am like most excited about that I'm really watching right now. I mean, number one on the list. I mean, I haven't gotten to Westworld yet. I am very excited to watch it, but since I haven't seen it yet, I can't say anything about it. But good Lord, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is so good. Mm-hmm. That show is amazing. Absolutely amazing. they clearly should have a created language in it. But,
of course.
But that show just blows me away. I absolutely love it. I'm loving the second season. I love the first season, and I'm really excited to see what they're going to do with it.
Awesome. That's a good one. Yeah. So that's everything that I had, unless you have anything you want to add, if you have anything that you want to, anywhere you want to direct the listeners to follow you.
I have a website, artoflanguageinvention.com, and from there you can find all my social media stuff. So my Twitter, my Tumblr, and also my YouTube series. I keep forgetting that I have a YouTube series, but I have a YouTube series for those that really want to get into the nitty gritty details about creating languages. That's where I do all the high level stuff. But also, if you are just interested in Tregeta slang and you want to learn more about it, there is an amazing fan site on the internet and an amazing fan community, and it's tregetaslang.info. Like, I didn't have anything to do with it. They put it up and maintain it, and they do an absolutely amazing job. Love them.
So thank you so much for joining me and for taking so much time to ask or answer all my nerdy questions.
Yeah, of course.
I will let you go now, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and I'll let you know when this is all up on the website and stuff.
All right, fantastic.
Have a great day.
All right, you too.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this podcast. We hope you enjoyed the interview with David J. Peterson. If you liked what you heard and you would like to hear more from us, you can check us out on Twitter, which is at Hypable Hype, and you can find us on hypable.com, which is hypable.com. In the podcast section, you can see all of our past shows, which includes an interview with Cass Morgan, the author of the 100 book series, as well as all our regular news shows where we break down each week in entertainment news. We would also like to let you guys know that Hype Podcast is actually planning a extensive revisit of the 100 season 1, 2, and 3 ahead of the season 4 premiere. And we're going to do them like we did the Gilmore Girls specials, in that I, in this case, will be the super fan, and both Marima and Pam, who are my co-hosts on Hype Podcast, will be watching for the first time. I've already been getting some reactions to season one, and it's pretty amazing, and I'm sure that's going to be a lot of fun for all the 100 fans to listen to. So you can check out the first episode, which is our review of season one, which will be up on Hype's iTunes feed, on Twitter at Hypable Hype, and on hypable.com, probably between Christmas and New Year's. If you have any comments for this podcast or in general for the show, you can tweet them at us. You can find us and leave us a comment on Hypable, or you can email us hype@hypable.com. Thank you so much to David J. Peterson. We will see you next week for the regular... That'll be the end of year show. Oh my gosh, 2016 is at an end, and we're going to recap the whole year in an episode of Hype. So stay tuned and have a wonderful week.